Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast and the Life of Dentistry Podcast.
The first ever combined dental podcast.
We should start them like that. Maybe we should just start co-promoting each other on
the Life and Millennial Podcast.
The Millennial Life, Life Podcast.
Now that has a ring to it.
I like that. Nice, Richard.
All right. Well,
good job, Rich.
We're back. We're live on Facebook. Why? I feel like I'm way hot.
Cool down.
It was a little hot on mine,
Mike.
Too.
Hot yeah. mic.
Yeah. Okay. Hot mic. Not physically hot, J-Dub.
Welcome back, everybody.
Exactly.
We're now back on Facebook Live. Got my Life and Dentistry crew, boys.
What's up?
Big Joe. Cole. John Wesley.
And Richard.
And the Rich.
Here we are at the TDA meeting.
Why are we at the TDA meeting? <It's>
like, Joe volunteered us to be the photographers.
I volunteered. So behind us, we have two lovely photographers. We are the official primary media source for the Tennessee Dental Association.
They are going to be very disappointed, I'm afraid.
I got my sister and cousin here with my mom's camera.
That's typical millennial, by the way. Bumming your mom's camera.
We got our cell phone. They would be disappointed if we used our cell phone camera. But we're having a good time, and that's what it's about.
We always have a good time.
Let's rock and roll. All right, everybody, we are live at the TDA meeting, National Tennessee Dental Association meeting. Having a blast, hanging out here with the Life and Dentistry crew. Guys, what's good? I'd love to get updates on everybody.
Okay.
We're officially y'all are all, first off, if you're listening on my podcast and you don't listen to Life and Dentistry podcast, you need to go check it out. These gentlemen and this crew is like not even a year out of school yet for the most part, most of them.
Cole's still in school.
I'm still crushing it in school. And he's a lifelong learner.
He loves
down
education.
In Tampa. What y'all are doing is basically unbelievable for most people that are where you're at. I thought I was pretty good at 3 years, but then y'all just kind of came in and said, and just laid it down on me.
So
I was pretty impressed.
We just want to have fun, man.
Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Our motto in life is make as many memories and have as much fun as possible. And J-Dub had the idea, you know, in dental school to do a podcast for dental students. We had no idea because we were kind of coming out at the same time. And we had no idea that you were even in the mix to do this millennial dentist thing.
Yeah, because we had Voices of Dentistry last year.
The Voices of Dentistry, and that's where it all came out.
I remember you came up at the first Voices of Dentistry, and you like did a little segment, like you kind of introduced yourself and said, "No," because I think they said that was right before
we released.
Yeah, and I remember saying, "Like, man, that guy's doing." It's like, man, we may end up doing something with him down the road. I was like, "We're getting ready to start ours." So let's.
Heck yeah.
It's pretty cool that it's all kind of came full circle. So
well, and it should. I mean, that's what dentistry is all about, man. Is frankly. My wife gets on to me sometimes because she's like, you realize you just share like all your secrets and stuff on like your show. And I'm like, maybe that's like, because she comes from like the corporate America side of the world where it's just like everything's like cutthroat, dog eat dog. And I'm like, babe, that's nothing what this is about. Like,
listen, Gary Tax made a statement to us one time and it stuck with us. He said it's called the theory of abundance.
Yeah.
Not the theory or the
not scarcity.
Scarcity. Yeah. Not scarcity. It's all about abundance because it's all going to come back full circle.
No, 100% agree. And frankly, the tide rises all ships.
Yeah.
That's absolutely. A fact, dude. You help someone get what they want, and at the end, you're going to get what you want out of the whole deal.
So update us. J-Dubs, why don't you start? 1 year out of school, what's it looking like? What have been your biggest struggles and bigger hurdles or what biggest wins?
Oh, man. You know, you get so much information in dental school. Like, you get so much stuff thrown at you. You think you know not everything, but you think you learn so much. And you get out, first week in the office, you're like, wow, I don't know anything. You know, it's like all this stuff is all new, the whole process. Things are going well. You know, update-wise, came out, was an associate for a year, and me and Matthew Whitson, we are about to purchase a practice in Cookeville. So there's a lot of stuff right now, transition-wise, that's happening, and it's kind of coming fast.
Talk about that a little bit. What's it been like trying to go from working as an associate, but buying into a practice? Because it's a different practice?
It's the same.
It's the same practice.
Same
okay.
one, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So is the doctor going to walk away?
No, he's going to stay on. He's going to stay on. We kind of joke and say we just got a room in the back that he'll just stay on until, you know, he just decides to.
And y'all are buying it out quit. Totally?
Yes, yes, yes. So the transition, man, like when we came out as an associate, like I said, you don't really know anything. Like,
no.
You've heard the saying, like, you know enough not to hurt somebody. I mean,
exactly.
You know, we know a lot of things, but it was nice to kind of get some time under my belt and kind of see, okay, what is it like to check hygiene? What is it like to interact? I mean, you know, we all have people skills, but really how to talk to people and how to not be so focused on just the teeth, but actually the person connected to the teeth, you know? And so good transition. It's a fast paced practice. So you kind of, when I first came on, it's kind of funny. The doctor that I work for right now, he said that I think my second week there, I was there by myself. And he's like, well, this is called the sink or swim method. So he's like, you learn by fire. So
well, that's get in there and do it.
Yeah,
that's the only way to learn.
Yeah,
you got to get in there and put yourself in some sticky situations where you're actually sweating a little bit.
Exactly.
Once you start, so you go home. You after you've been sweating all day, you know you learn something.
Yeah, exactly. So I tell you, it's been a lot, man. The transition. It's been crazy.
When's your date, J-Dub, that you and Matthew are?
June 1st.
June 1st.
June 1st is the official date. Yep.
Dude, we're like less than like this time next month. You'll be practicing.
Well, June 1st is actually like on a Saturday.
Okay.
So June 3rd is actually going to be like the official Monday that it'll be it.
So what's your mindset? I mean, what do you feel like you're pretty much? You got all your ducks in a row, and you know all the big things are worked out, or do you feel like there's still going to be a lot to do? I mean, once that official change of hands happens, you know, do you feel like there's still a lot of work to be done with the transition?
There's a lot of things that still have to be done. And I want to give a lot of credit to the office because they've done a whole lot of things for us just to try to help us with this. I mean, honestly, there's so much behind the scenes stuff that has to go on, even with insurance, getting things switched over. And if it weren't for all the ladies doing stuff for us, I mean, we'd be in a whole lot of trouble.
Did y'all use a transition firm, or how have you done that?
No.
The millennial way, just winging it.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. You'd kind of have to know the doctor that I work for. He's one of a kind. I mean, he's an excellent guy, real great person. When I first started there, I didn't even have to really have a contract. I was just kind of there working, you know. So it's kind of one of those things where we knew what we had. It was kind of the word of mouth, like, this is what we want to do. We like to practice and, you know, kind of.
And you've known him for a while, right?
We had, yeah. And one of the hygienists there, my family goes to church with her. So like there was a connection in the office, and I think Matthew's wife actually was a patient at the office. So there was other connections. So it wasn't like a deal where you come in, you don't know anybody, and you're kind of figuring out all, you know, the numbers and everything made sense. So but past that, it was just kind of just getting to know everybody. And
I would actually argue, though, that that's more the norm than most. I think people like the people that want to have financial gain in a situation make it a bigger deal. Like, I think that there's a lot of dentists, because I think that's that generation of dentists kind of practice that way, right? Most of them are kind of word of mouth, you know, handshake means something type of people. And they're really just trying to transition their practices into someone that they can trust. Yet in comes all these different transition companies and people that want to make money on sales, who like to create solutions to problems that aren't even there. You know, that's, you know, it has its own headaches doing it probably like that. You know, because they're probably, I'm a big believer in that people trying to get contracts just regardless, you know, even if it's family or people, you know, just from a get go.
And we did, but it was one of those things where just kind of the old school mentality, you know,
there's a lot to be said for relationship building.
100%.
I mean, I think that is the key to having probably a good transition, just really having a good relationship with the staff and with the dentist. And that's what they've done for almost a year now, just been kind of kindling this relationship to make a smooth transition. Because at the end of the day, you want what's best for the selling doctor too. You know, you guys are going to take care of Andy until the day he's gone, you know.
Well, see, it all goes back to the abundance concept we talked about. I mean, you can't, if you're only trying to have your own single agenda, gain, or whatever it is, like it's not going to work out. But when you think of the whole concept, you're putting everybody into the whole thought process, that's how things work out for the better.
Cole?
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
I pretty much just sit on the beach, and that's about it.
I swear that's all you do is drink.
That's all.
Drink. I don't think he's ever going to graduate, really. I don't know.
What have you been doing this past year?
I have been sitting on a beach doing some dentistry, hanging out with these guys when I can. I kind of feel a little bit, which I am a ways away from everybody, but down doing a residency in Seminole, Florida.
Which residency?
It's University of Florida. They've got two or three, but it's the one in Seminole, St. Pete, Clearwater area. And it's a good residency. What I did was out of dental school, I figured I'd apply to three residencies that I would feel good going to.
Did you know you wanted to do a residency right out of school?
No.
He really needed.
I mean, I kind of. Yeah.
we did. He didn't know. We helped him find that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really pushed him in school to find one. No, he's a good dentist.
But I mean, these guys can tell you. I went back and forth on it. I definitely didn't want to get stuck in a residency that I didn't feel like I was going to get a lot out of. You know, and get
good for you because I feel like half the time people are like, oh, I just need to go to residency. And they just go to residency and they have no idea what the heck they do with that residency.
I know
you
gotta
go.
Yeah, that definitely.
Try this one out.
That was not me.
That's a lot of people, though.
That's what they don't want to wing.
Yeah,
really. And it's a year of your life. It's a lot of income if you're not in a good residency.
Yeah.
If you're doing another year of dental school for a whole year, even if they're paying you like 30 or 40 grand, think of what you're losing out on.
Yeah. But I think it's been great for the clinical experience. I mean, the way they look at it is you treatment plan it, you do it. So there's really nothing.
Here's what I think the difference is, Cole, and I feel like me and you both kind of do the same procedures when it comes to, like, you do a lot of grafting, I do a lot of grafting, implants, but the way I do things, I don't necessarily have all of the literature in my head to back it up. Do you feel like you've got a lot of the literature just because you've been in the academic program? Like, they tell you this is why you're doing that. This is how many millimeters. This is all the science behind it.
I mean, really, we don't really talk literature. For me, it's just been, you know, having the opportunity to do these procedures with people who have done them for a long time. That, I mean, I'm the one doing it, but they're in the building. So if I need something, I can grab them. You know, I mean, it's given me the opportunity that when I do the implants or when I do the grafting or whatever, I've got a periodontist or an oral surgeon or a dentist that's been doing those things for a while that I can ask questions to, or, you know, make sure that I'm learning what I need to learn to do the procedures as well as I can. So, I think that is one of the differences.
Would you go back and do it again?
Yes.
Are you going to miss the beach?
Yes. Of course he is. Every day we get a picture.
Dude, that's all
it's
he
like
freaking Cole
does. And his feet and then the ocean
that's
in the background.
Nice.
No, he's got a good gig.
What do you think is the number one thing that you learned that you wouldn't have you needed to know? Like, what's the biggest techie point from the residency?
Like
that made the difference.
I think the biggest thing is,
because at some point you have to go out and just do it yourself, right?
Right.
Like, no one's watching.
Right.
People are paying you money.
And I felt like for me, you know, the very beginning of my career is when I'm the most impressionable, right? And when I'm trying to take those first jumps into learning these things, that I could go into a practice. I mean, first of all, it's hard to find a dentist that'll let you place a ton of implants and do a bunch of grafting and all that in your first year in their practice. You know, they've got a reputation. They've got this practice that they've built up. And I don't blame them for not being real willing to let somebody come in and, you know, place a lot of implants on their patients or whatever. But, you know, being able to sit down and place implants or do bone and soft tissue grafting, knowing that in the hall right next to me is a periodontist or an oral surgeon or whoever it may be that's done it a lot, then I can say, you know, I've made the incision here, or, you know, reflected this way, have them take a look.
How often do you have them do it? So what's it like? So let's say you got a something scheduled. Let's say you got like a big surgery plan where you're doing a couple implants. How often will you have them take a look at all at that patient? Every surgery?
No. Definitely more towards the beginning of the residency.
Okay. Do they have to look at everything?
No.
They don't have to look at anything?
No.
So you could see someone do whatever you want to do and you could go?
I could.
Okay.
Yeah. So usually what I'll do is, you know, I have total autonomy in treatment planning. So when I have a patient come in, we do the exam, see what they need, what they want, and I treatment plan it. That's my treatment plan. Nobody, you know, looks at it and tells me, no, you need to do this or that. Then when I've got a procedure coming up, you know, I just did a sinus tap yesterday and placed two implants. And I mean, I had the patient there, numbed him up. I drew some blood for some PRF and, you know, looked at the CBCT and did my thing. And I grabbed them once to ask a question, and they came in and, you know, gave me some advice. And to me, that's been the greatest benefit of it, because I could, you know, I could go in a practice and do some of these things. But is the dentist going to be, you know, first of all, have they done it a lot and are they good at it? And can I just grab them and say, hey, look at this, or how should I do this? That's been a real, real benefit for me.
Just having somebody there to help, just that is big, because you need to do those cases the first time. And like that case yesterday was freaking phenomenal. But that's something that probably, if you're not in that situation, you may not even get into, just because you may not want to do it without someone being there.
Exactly. Proud of you, Cole.
But it's been thanks, bud.
You come along. He's like, I'm proud of you, son.
You've come a long way.
Thanks, daddy.
Hey, that's right.
But now, I'm transitioning into practice, buying a practice here in Tennessee, and going to be here in 2 months and be a practice owner.
So Cole the Yankee is ready coming down to the South.
Yeah.
Where are you from, Cole?
I'm not really a Yankee, am I?
To us, right?
And that's kind of.
That's not Yankee. Illinois is Yankee.
I don't know. So he is a Tennessee fan. So
only in football.
Hey, I was born in Tennessee. I was born in Nash, Vegas.
Only in football.
There you go.
I was born with a guitar in my hand.
Yeah.
Boots on my feet. I was.
Classicness.
Yeah, I was.
Hey, Joe, what about you? What's your year been like?
I've had a good year, man. Better than I deserve. So, personally, my wife and I are expecting a youngin'.
Congratulations.
Thanks,
you did this,
bud.
I think.
Yeah. That's one scary. Month, we're going to have a little baby
little Joe Blaylock
yeah.
running around.
This world is going to get a nice surprise.
The kid's going to come out fat and ugly.
That kid is going to whip the crap out of you.
Beat your ass.
He'll come out punching you.
Didn't you
in
say
the
you
face.
Wanted to name him Cole?
Yeah, he's going to name him Cole.
My wife's maiden name is Cole. My wife
Gosh,
wants to.
Do you know if you
so
name
awesome.
Your kid Cole,
you would
like
never
Cole
live,
will,
that, live that
No,
down.
That's why I can't name him Cole.
But see, Cole will forever be with you. I mean, that will be.
I
if can't. That's
I
his
told
name.
Our roommate in college was Cole, and this is Cole. I'm not naming. My
I
son.
Told him if he names his kid Cole, then I'll let him do my wedding for me.
I'm doing the wedding anyway. I'm ordained minister.
So yeah, he's
Richard,
ordained. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I should call you yeah. Richard by your first name. Anyway, so for me, clinically,
you married your sister, right?
Shut your mouth.
No, you did, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Married her.
Like you married, like
I
not,
did the ceremony.
Not you yeah. married. Yeah,
he's
like,
a reverend.
You know,
we call
yeah.
him Reverend Joe.
Joe.
Yeah. Reverend Big Joe. Blaylock.
Bishop Joe.
Yeah.
Doctor.
Brother.
Brother Joe. I like that.
Anyway, so I'm an associate in Cookeville, Tennessee. I really had a good associateship, man. The doctor I work for does a lot of everything. You got CEREC, uses the same day crowns. We restore our own implants, place implants. Do our grafting. So it's kind of like Cole talked about his residency. This was a residency for me. I think it was kind of the perfect fit for the kind of dentistry that I wanted to do. Right now, my wife and I are trying to decide on what's next for us, where we want to live, where we want to start a practice, and whether that's buy in to where I'm at, do a startup, or acquire another office. We don't know. And
that's
we're
the hard.
That
that's
out.
The hard question.
We're trying to figure
you
that
need,
out.
You need to be an owner, though.
Oh, yeah, ASAP. There's the only way I'll pay my student debt back.
I love that you get that. You say that so, like, matter-of-factly, but I would argue that the majority of people don't get that.
Well, they're going to be screwed.
Like, what's the number one reason people say they want to go to corporate dentistry?
Yeah, to pay off.
They
yeah.
want guaranteed income, right? They want the guaranteed income. And why is it? Because they're worried about their loans.
Yeah.
Like, if you people do the math...
But you
can't
gotta,
pay
you
off
gotta think,
your loans.
You got to think long term.
You can't
think,
pay off your loans no. doing it that way. It just doesn't work.
No, the only way I'm going to be able to pay off my student debt before I'm 55 is if I'm an owner ASAP.
Yeah,
and have a nice lifestyle.
So let's talk about this. So why? What are you? What's coming out of your decision? You have options. You have a kid a month away, so hopefully
kid a month away.
You have options, hopefully. Yeah.
No, we do. So we have options. The big thing for us, this is the truth. Where do we want to raise our family?
That's a big one.
The options are there. I could go anywhere, you know, really in Tennessee and be happy, but where exactly do we want to settle down? I grew up on a beef cattle farm in a small town, and we're real close to my family and her family, so we're leaning toward, you know, maybe hometowning it up, but my wife
would kill it there.
She'd be happy. She'd be really happy in Knoxville. 30 minutes west of my hometown. I have a house that I commute from in my hometown that we bought. We have ties to our hometown. We feel like our hometown would treat us well. But I have an excellent opportunity in the office that I'm at to purchase and partner with an existing practice that's been there a long time. And I also have the opportunity to do a startup practice anywhere, really, in the world. I mean, I could physically do anything in the world I wanted to. It's just, where is the best place to raise our family? From your perspective, you're where I'm at. You have $350,000 in student debt.
What do you do?
What are you going to do, Sully?
So my first thing is, you kind of have to separate things in the cat. What's the smart money decision? What's the start life decision, right? So let's talk about the money just because that's what gets everybody flustered to begin with, is the loan issue and the debt load and whatnot. I think that in today's day and age, it is hard to do a startup and way more headache than you need to do. You know, look,
like
people are doing it. It's great, and people are having success with it. But there's a lot of headaches that come with it.
Is it more for the ego, you think, sometimes?
I don't know if it's that. I mean, some people just know what they want. They know that, like, some people have a very defined vision of what they want their practice to look like, and so maybe it makes sense to do it. For me, a buying out a practice cash flows 10 times quicker than a startup. No doubt about it. I mean, assuming you're buying a cash flowing practice, which you should be, but because as soon as you, I mean, I will tell you, because that's what I did, right? I bought into a cash flowing practice. Day one, I made more money than I did as an associate. At a startup, that's not going
to
happen.
Explain to me. So I'm not gone through that yet. Explain to me kind of in detail on where that money's coming from. Like how is your income increasing that much?
Because the only reason that you're an employee of that office as an associate is they're making money off you. Like that needs to be, you know, the big thing I think is that really would help in all this, and I'm going to probably jump around a lot of places, is transparency. So if you go in as an associate, I think that there needs to have a level of transparency immediately. I think that doctor should be discussing with you his overhead, how things work, because one, it's good for him to know. Two, it's important for you to know what you're getting into, and kind of it keeps you both accountable. And I would have no problem telling an associate, look, I'm going to pay you 30% of collections. I'm making 10% off you. Like that's how the math works. That's because why else would a doctor bring you in and add that risk of getting along, you mistreating the patients, hurting the patients? Gosh, there's a number of things. It has to, the money has to make sense. So when you go from being an associate to an owner, all of a sudden, all that extra percentage is yours. In my situation, I was paid 30% of collections from my production. I got nothing from hygiene. Just my production.
So you got paid from production, not collections?
No, I got paid off collections, okay. Which was terrible, which I would not recommend as an associate getting paid off collections, because you have no
control.
You have no control over what the front desk collects.
You can work
that's
your
not my
tail
problem.
Off, not have any control over.
So I am a firm believer as an owner now that if I hire an associate, I will pay them probably off adjusted production, which is real life collections, right? Or what we should collect. The other part is production's stupid. That's not a real number. But all this is to say that they have to make money. So where I made a lot of my money, where my money doubled, was one, now all of a sudden hygiene income, that could be a big money. You know, we had four hygienists. So like that's a big cash cow to a degree. And then the extra percentage that we were getting from my own income. So the question that you really have to decide is financially, you know you need to own. Right, like the numbers.
It's the only way to pay back my student debt. There's no other way.
You can't pay off your student loans making $130,000 a year.
Impossible.
Why is it? This is my question. Why is it that I feel like, and we talked about this earlier, why do so many people think the opposite of that mindset? You just know what I'm saying? Like to not, like we said, the associate route. And
I think part of it, I mean, it's like in dental school, you're not taught numbers. You're not taught how to figure these things out. And then you come out, you know, and these corporate offices are talking about how much they're going to pay you, and you just don't have any background to figure it out yourself.
And it's, I think part of it's fear.
I think that's probably the biggest part.
I think
of
part
it.
Of people Maybe have no is, idea, yeah. And they're like, well, if someone's going to give a, I think the better, the poor part of this is it's not based off of math. It's based off of emotion.
Yes,
right? Because if people exactly, were looking yeah. at numbers and they said, okay, if I'm going to be at $130,000 a year, that means that it's breaking down. Okay, then let's just say after tax, I got 100 grand or 110 grand. Okay. And you've got a $4,000 loan payment a month. Okay, so that's 4 times 12, that's $48,000. So you're living off basically at that point 50 grand, but you're making, you know, 130 grand. Like that's crazy, right? So people need to start to realize, one, how much money isn't a lot of money. You know, and by the time you start to add in some of this stuff, you know, it doesn't make sense to be, you know, there, especially when you think about your hygienist is making $70,000 or $60,000 and they have no risk and no benefit. And it's not that big of a difference.
Dude, it's really not.
Think about that.
It's not.
Yeah, so, that's actually a good point.
So to me, the ownership thing, it has to come with substantially more money. So I think that's a big reason why people don't want to do it, is they just don't get the math part of it.
And what about
And there's
this?
Also a lot of people doing lunch and learns, though, that are shoving it down their throat that it's what they need to do.
Well, see, that's
they're
getting bombarded
with false information.
I feel like we probably got a. I mean, I feel like that was a big part of a lot of things we heard too. You know, is that same
they
thing?
They'll try to scare you a little bit. And two, you know, this is the millennial dentist, you know, man right here, Richard. here's the thing about millennials: we're afraid to make a commitment. Sometimes
that's
huh?
true. No, I agree.
I mean, that's my biggest hurdle right now. I can't decide on what to do until I make a commitment on where I want to live.
So let's go back to that. I think that I would encourage you to pick where you want to live and figure it all out. Because to me, and that's a true millennial mindset. Like a little bit of the old generations, like we're going to go where the job is. You know, millennials aren't going into rural areas for the most part. They're going into where they want to go to cities. They don't mind making less money and being where they want to be. We have more, which I think is a good thing. We place more value on relationships, community, and life experiences, right? And so I think that if you're where you want to be, you'll be more happy than making more money in an area that you don't want to be. So I would encourage you to say where's the family the happiest long term, and then let's find something there that works. I would say to that point, once you find that out, I would just find a practice and buy the practice. I mean, you have no business being even 1 year out. I'm confident that you have no business being an associate anymore.
No, it's time. Like I've got to make.
Because at some point you have to lock the door or open the door, and it's your practice. Yep. And 2 years versus 3 years of associateship's not gonna like all of a sudden make it a.
Sully, how long were you an associate?
I was a year and a half.
Are you full owner? Or are you part owner?
I own 50% of practice.
Okay.
Yep. Let me ask you this, Sully. And we'll talk about this. What was the hardest thing for you about, it may be different because it was your dad's practice, but what was the hardest thing for you about being an associate?
You know, there was not a lot of making less money, knowing that someone else is making money off me, and some control issues. I mean, the big part, I think that's the biggest thing is what we're going to struggle with as a generation going into older dentist practice or other generation practices is not being able to have control over the way we do things. The system's in place. I mean, my dad didn't have freaking consent forms, y'all. And I would probably argue to say that a lot of, gosh, I know your doctor didn't have consent forms, you know, or if they took medical histories, like that was good.
We have a pretty up-to-date office, I feel like, and they're just now coming around to it.
So stuff like that. Like if you're the owner and you tell the team we're going to do something, they kind of have to do it. If you're the associate, they still kind of, he's still writing their checks.
Exactly, yeah.
This is something yeah. to people who are listening and thinking about, you know, this deal with associateships and ownership. The hardest thing for me as an associate, I never saw this coming, is knowing that these patients that I'm seeing, they're not my patients. Like I'm seeing Dr. Bryant's patients. I'm one of his associates and they're coming to see him. There's something to be said, I think, for showing up and knowing that these people came to see you because they wanted to see you and this is your practice. There's like a satisfaction I think you would get from that and a dissatisfaction from knowing that they're not there because of you. You're just treating them for someone else.
And this is where, so the comment you made there kind of bugs me too, because I think this is where we've kind of screwed ourselves, or we have not, but the older than that 45 to 60 year old generation is hurting us, because what they don't have, they think they need associate. They don't know if they need associate. They can't afford associate. They don't even know if they want a partner. They don't even know what their plan is. And so they kind of just hire these people because of a need, or because someone's telling them that they need to hire somebody. So there's no plan in place. That's a big problem I have. So, you know, doctor comes in, it's like, and I'm just going to be, can I just be point blank with you? So when you came in, have y'all written out a timeline of what it looks like for you to buy in? Does that terrify you?
In that situation, yes.
To me, it should, because you're...
Especially if I had the intent to come in knowing for sure I wanted to buy into that practice.
Well, and look, my point is, we don't know, right? When we graduate, we don't know our ass from the hole in the wall, let alone whether we want to buy into a practice or not. We may think we do, but we don't know if we do. Or we may think that's not the practice I want to buy in, and then we do. The problem is if we have no contracts in place that allow us to at least have that trajectory, I've seen more and more and more people get screwed. Because let's say you go to your doctor right now and say, you know what? I've decided I want to stay here. I want to buy in. What if he says no? What if he says, okay, that's fine. We're going to do a graduated buy-in over the next 5 years. Well, that may mean that your income doesn't really change. I mean, that's what we all do. I mean, I will tell you the hardest part about our buy-in and our transition was that I was ready way before dad was. We had nothing in place. Then we got to argue about what's the practice worth. I mean, do you have a practice purchase price? So right now you're helping build this practice. So what's the practice worth? Is it what worth was before you got there, after you got there? And these are questions that I think, you know, it's unfortunate because we don't have advocates in this. Because the advocates are the doctors, usually the senior doctors saying, this is how we did it, this is how I did it. Or they have some transition guy trying to make their cut that's telling them this is how we should do it and we should just suck it up and that's how it is. We have no representation. And so I'm really, I'm going on a somewhat of a tangent.
Well, how did you and your dad do it? What did you guys end up figuring out?
It was terrible. It was the only time we ever argued. So what happened was we get to the point where I said, look, I'm leaving if you don't let me buy into the practice. Financially, I knew what was going on. We had dropped our overhead probably down to 50% with two doctors. I'm getting paid 30% of collections. So that's basically 20% extra, okay, based off overhead plus hygiene. So my income didn't double. My income was substantially different when I bought in, right? So I knew, I did the math. I was like, okay, well, this doesn't make sense. So I said, I'm either going to buy in or going to leave. He said, okay, let's buy in. So then we got to figure out what's the practice worth. Well, we went from 1.4 million to basically, by the time we bought in, we were at 2.2. So we've had $800,000 in growth in basically a year and a half. So what's the practice worth? I mean, the difference between a mortgage payment on a $2 million practice and a $1 million practice is a big difference. And half of that, and I could say, he could say, well, half of that's my equity of helping build it. He could say, well, you didn't have the opportunity to do it without me, blah, 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 blah. So where we ended up, and look.
And this your dad too. That's crazy.
It is. And that's my point, people, is look, most family relationships don't end the way, it's hard. I would argue it's harder.
I was thinking in my head that it was actually really easy for you, that your dad had all this laid out, that you guys just came into
the blanket what he was doing. It's not his fault. It was super tough. So what we ended up doing was basically, one night, we're kind of a yelling family. So we're hashing this out and basically, he thinks it's worth more. I think it's worth less, yada, yada, yada. So what we ended up agreeing was basically we said, okay, we're going to attribute 50% of growth to you, 50% of growth to me, and split the difference. So then I said, okay, we're going to buy 50% of the practice worth $1.8 million. Then I'm going to go get a loan for $750,000. Then we had all this debt, on the practice. Our practice had just bought a new CEREC, another, and a cone beam, plus some existing equipment. So yeah, you got $250,000 in debt on the practice. So you got to figure out how you're going to do the debt.
When you were there, so basically there was no purchase price set.
No.
And that's why the
worst
whole issue.
Decision ever.
Yeah, that's where the whole issue came into play, was because there was not one at the beginning.
So my big, in hindsight, what I wish I had known was set a purchase price and set a trajectory that allows you both to buy in on the terms you want to buy in before anything else happens. It's just like saying, look, we're going to date, we're going to figure this out. None of this is like a commitment. But if we do decide that we're going to want to move forward with this, this is the plan we're going to follow.
Right, yeah.
Because that way, if you get into a situation where
Joe's ready and he decides he wants to stay there, they just press play and now they roll out that 1 year buyout or whatever it is. But I guarantee you, if he goes to him right now and says, hey, I want to be a 50% owner next year, he's probably going to look at you like, you crazy? You know, maybe not.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What you talking about, Willis?
Because, and I see that happen more and more, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I will tell you, you're the fortunate one that it happens that easy. And the ones where I see that happen are the ones where, like, the dentist doesn't need the money. They've saved the money. It's to them more about just passing it on to people they like. And
it's almost
patients.
Like a, it's like a legacy thing at
it's
this a, point.
It's exactly.
You know? It's, you got, cause
and that's fewer and farther between.
And he's talked to us about that too. You know, it wants to be something where not just anyone comes into the practice. It's someone that he, you know, he trusts and he wants the best for the patients. And, you know, it's a legacy thing is the best way to describe it. You know, the legacy he wants to leave. So
it's harder. Cole, how are you going about finding yours?
So I actually have found... I am in the process of purchasing right now.
Talk to me more about that. Are you using any representation? Are they using your representation? Who's doing the deal?
We both kind of are. I mean, nothing officially like paying anybody right now.
Okay.
Maybe a mistake. I mean, you know, we're not like all the way through with everything, but definitely had people look at contracts and all that along the way. So. Yeah, but still in the process of getting the financing and, you know, figuring out what we want the contract to say.
How'd y'all come up with the purchase price?
It's just based on the mainly the average production for the last 3 years and just a percentage of it. So
when you looked at the practice, how did you evaluate the value to you? Like, what were you looking for in a practice?
Okay, well... I mean, first of all, like you said from the beginning, I knew I wanted to be I wanted to be in an area that
it's
I like.
A good looking crew going by.
It's in an area that I love. It's going to be not too far from, you know, some of my closest friends, and so I started with that. But then the practice itself is doing great. There's a lot of growth potential.
Talk about the procedural, like the procedure mix. What kind of dentistry are they doing?
Mostly just bread and butter, but it's a standalone building, plenty of room for growth, pretty much bread and butter dentistry, drill and fill, crown and bridge.
Brilliant.
It's got a lot of growth potential there.
See, and so. That's another thing I hit on a lot of times is, to me, the value is in that practice. When you buy out a practice, I see so many people buy practices where they can't do half the dentistry that's there. You know, the practice looks really cool. It's really flashy. They do a lot of dentistry that they like, but like it's not dentistry that they can replicate, you know? And so I am very hesitant for any new dentist to go in there and buy a $1 million practice. It's like, can you actually go in there and produce $1 million?
That was because I had somebody reach out to me and told me this huge practice that's going to be, you know, the dentist is looking to sell. And this thing is enormous. And I'm like, I do not want to go in there and try to keep this thing going
as a
new dentist.
It's tempting to go
in
there.
I'd rather grab that practice where the dentist is doing amalgams and crowns and I can go in and do some endo and
is it really?
Yes.
So
honey hole.
So if you got a practice where a dentist has been patching and repairing teeth and dentures and stuff for 10 years, that's a honey hole.
But see, I think if you're going that far, I think it's a little less of a honey hole. Just
why is that?
In my opinion, if you're going into a practice where the dentist has just done a ton of just patchwork, the patients are expecting that. They don't really value good dental work.
That's true.
It's going to take some time to change the mindset.
Yeah, I bet your income won't go like this, like you think. I bet it'll be slower.
I think there's a nice in between there. Where the dentist isn't doing much more than bread and butter dentistry, but at the same time isn't just doing
crazy patch. They're referring a ton of stuff out.
Yeah,
I agree with that. Because if they're doing just a nice good old restorative dentist, but they're doing no endo, no extractions, no implants, no ortho, no that's probably the true honey hole. I mean, you make a good point. The practice that's run down so much, where then all the patients that's what they expect. That can be hard. I agree with that.
So that's where I'm at. Hopefully have it worked out in 2 months, and once I'm done with the residency,
when's your finals?
Transition right in there.
Is it like school?
Yeah. It is nothing like school. It is nothing like school.
How many tests did you take this year?
40.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You have homework?
No. No.
You guys did hooked on phonics?
No, it's like... You need to come down. Joe hasn't come down and visited yet. I've got a place for him to stay on the beach, and then I'll take you in there, and I'll show you what it's like there.
I gotta say, he's
got this child coming too. I'm so screwed.
I think Cole got a pretty sweet end of the deal, especially he's on the beach. I really think so.
Even though
y'all need to come visit, man.
We're gonna keep on keeping on. I'm gonna feed this belly.
I'm hungry.
Me too.
All right, buddy.
Hey, good questions. Thank y'all.
We'll be back tonight.
We're smarter, not harder. We will see you next time. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.